Well, hi, everyone. Welcome to another Basecamp and Secret Garden Campfire Conversation. We're really glad you're joining us. Tonight we have a friend that I met, about a year ago. And Charlie was involved with my daughter. So, some of you in this ministry program at the church called Student Leadership University. And some of you supported her on these trips that she was taking each summer. And I was so impressed with the program, and I saw the huge change that this was making in my daughter's life. And so I met Charles at one of the events that they invited parents to. So we initially met each other there and had a brief conversation. But just several weeks ago, Charlie asked me if we wanted to get together for a cup of coffee and talk for a little bit. And during that conversation, he talked about his fascination with the story about Paul Anderson, world's strongest man who happened to be a believer, and this fascinating life that he had. And Charlie's been telling the story as he's been speaking different parts around the country and doing different type of events. So I asked him if he would come on with us and tell us some of the story and let us interact with him. So before he does, let me just invite all of you listening. We'd love for you to ask some questions on the chat line that you may have for him as he's telling the story. So don't hesitate to do that. Or if you want to get on the phone and ask it, you just hit star 2, and we will see your hand and then unmute you and get you on. So, Charlie, thank you for doing this with us.
Well, happy to be here.
So starting off, how did you kind of intersect into the story? I mean, once we talked, I realized his name was familiar to me, and as it was to John Hart on the phone. And we didn't know if it was our Campus Crusade for Christ connections in our early years or my Athletes in Action connections, or we didn't know what. But either way, I really didn't know his story. So how did you kind of intersect that story to the point that you're speaking about it?
Well, Paul Anderson as I mentioned to you a couple weeks ago when we met for coffee, he's kind of a forgotten name. And when I was a child, I used to read the Guinness Book of World Records, and his world record was in there for the greatest weight ever lifted by a human being, which was at that time recorded at about 6,270 pounds, a little over a 3-ton lift that he did in June of 1957, about a year after he won the gold medal in the Olympics. And, you know, childhood memories fade from sight. And then a few years ago, about 10 years ago, his world record came back to mind. I began to dig back into his life. And at the time, I had no idea that he was a believer. And found out that he had passed away in 1994 and begun to just dig back into his life, found out that he was a Christian and that he had started a youth home that he had run for pretty much his entire life following his Olympics. And just really got pulled into an amazing world.
Yeah, so first you heard about him because of his weightlifting, and then eventually it brought into the rest of the story. So as you've done research, is he just mainly known for weightlifting or also for this youth home that he started?
Now, really what's so amazing about Paul Anderson is that Paul Anderson probably accomplished more by the age of 24 than most of us would probably end up accomplishing in a life. And he basically, he walked away from the sport of weightlifting at the age of 24 after he won the gold medal in Melbourne, Australia, and turned his life over to Christ and felt led by Christ to start the Paul Anderson Youth Home, which is in Vidalia, Georgia, and ended up spending the rest of his life up to about the age of 63 when he passed away, supporting, building, and developing that home. And that's really where the passion of Paul Anderson can really captivate you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so take us back a little bit about this man, you know, and his life, kind of the early years, and kind of take us through his story.
Okay. He was actually born with a kidney ailment called Bright's disease. It's usually leads to end-stage renal failure and death in life. And he was born with this. And so he kind of stepped out in life with a bad set of cards health-wise. physically he was not a very big guy. At the age of 19, when he was recruited to go play football for Furman University, he was only about 5'9" and weighed about 190 pounds. And had never lifted a weight in his life, was a running back for Furman University during his freshman year. And at that time, weightlifting was kind of frowned upon in college and pro football. It was, you know, not believed to help football players. They felt like it would compromise their flexibility and coordination. So there was really no weightlifting that went on except in secret. And Paul Anderson, one day basically what happened was he stopped by a secret lifting location where a lot of the football players were lifting weights, and was in there just horsing around, goofing around with some friends. And someone just said, "Hey, Paul, you know, you need to stop goofing off and, you know, try to lift some weights, you know, get yourself bigger, get yourself stronger." And Paul decided to take him up on the challenge. And at 5'9" tall and 190 pounds, he stepped under a squat bar that had about 400 pounds on it and amazingly did 3 deep knee bend squats unassisted with relatively little effort. And people stood in amazement. Paul himself was amazed, realized that he had a gift for strength, and ended up dropping out of school in about 1951 and spent the next several years training. Within his first year of lifting, his body weight went to about 275 pounds, and he broke the world record for squats at about 700 pounds, which was a record that has stood for 30 years. A year later, he broke his own record with a squat of about 900 pounds. And he was capable of squatting amounts that were in the neighborhood of 1,100 to 1,500 pounds in his life. And those are records that have really never been broken since. So he just had a God-given gift for this. Ended up becoming a heavyweight, what they would call a super heavyweight, because his body weight surged to about 360 pounds. And made his way by 1955 onto the U.S. Olympic weightlifting team. And just for the next year and a half, only over about an 18-month period is all his real performance career lasted. Over about an 18-month period, he went on a world tour and just decimated competitors at such an astounding rate that by the time he got to the Olympics in 1956, countries were pulling heavyweights out of his division because they were so fearful that Paul would just humiliate anyone that crossed his path. And he was capable of not going into competitions and winning by a pound or a half a pound or 2 or 3 pounds, but he was capable of going into competitions and outlifting competitors by literally hundreds of pounds.
Now this is not a guy who, I'm guessing, kind of was groomed for this, right? I mean, he just my impression is he kind of came out of nowhere and surprised everyone, kind of a phenom. Is that right?
Yes, he did. He trained totally alone. He never had a coach. He never joined a gym. At the time, in the early 1950s, there were not weight systems or weight racks large enough to handle the capacity of weight that he was capable of lifting. He was also very poor. His father worked for the Conservation Corps, you know, out of the Great Depression. So Paul grew up very poor. And he basically had a gym in his backyard in Toccoa, Georgia, that was full of car axles and 55-gallon drums full of cement and pulleys hanging from trees and, you know, those kind of objects. He never really lifted plates and bars like we do in gyms today. He just lifted these odd objects, and he trained completely in solitude. And even when he made it onto the U.S. Olympic team in 1955, the coaches made absolutely no effort to interfere with his training that he had developed on his own. And nobody could really understand what they termed at the time to be kind of kooky training techniques that he had developed. So he was very much a solitary lifter.
Charlie, I'm just thinking, what drives a man to do, what was his motivation for doing that?
There's a man who's a PhD named Randall Strossen, and he is a psychologist who has very big in the weightlifting industry and just and studies a lot of the psyche of weightlifters. And he said that Paul Anderson just had an absolute belief in his heart that he had the capacity to be the strongest man that walked the earth. And that for him to have that kind of belief, he truly felt like that to become that person, he had to literally train all day, 10 to 12 hours a day, every day of his life. And so he did that. And, you know, in just a 3-year period, went from being a 190-pound kid playing football to being a 370, 360-pound strongman who was back lifting in excess of 3 tons.
Okay, so let me ask you, and I know the answer to this, but jump way forward in time to his starting this youth home, and then let's come back and talk more about his Olympic competition. But what I'm so impressed by is, you know, when you hear about what he did in the Olympics, what he did with the sport of weightlifting, but then you know the kind of man he was and what he committed his life to, which he could have had probably a different life just with the fame that could have come his way, that he could have, you know, optimized, if you will, as an Olympic weightlifter for his own pleasure. So jump in the future and talk about after his weightlifting career, this youth home that he started and what that was like for him.
The youth home was started around 1960, 1961, about 4 years after he won his gold medal. He turned professional and began to earn money for his weightlifting feats, and he saved most of that money and used that to help start the youth home. He had become pretty well known to some of the law enforcement people in the small town in Georgia where he lived, and married a woman around 1960-1961, Glenda. Became Glenda Anderson, and someone that God very much put into his life. And she is the one who kind of steered him in the right direction of how to really put this home together. He had the passion for it, but he didn't really have the knowledge. And one of the first things he did when he started the home was he decided to ride a bicycle from Atlanta, Georgia, to Father Flanagan's home, Boys Town. And which is a funny story, because you can imagine what bicycles looked like. You remember back and remember what bicycles looked like in the early 1960s. Now, they were steel. They were goofy looking, probably weighed 60 or 70 pounds back then. And Paul Anderson decided to ride this bicycle, to which was described by some people as being an elephant on a tricycle. That's the way it looked with him, weighing 360 pounds riding this bike. And along his journey, actually, it was his first day of riding. He stopped to have lunch at a little restaurant called the Dwarf Grill, and went inside, sat down by himself, had to order a little chicken sandwich. And the owner of the restaurant recognized him, came over and sat with him, and had a conversation with him for about 15 or 20 minutes, and knew that he was Paul Anderson. They talked a little bit about his Olympic feats, and then conversation shifted to what he's doing now. And owner was so impressed with his vision to build this Paul Anderson youth home that he gave him a check for $25 and shook his hand and introduced himself as Truett Cathy, who is the, you know, founder of Chick-fil-A restaurant. So it just shows you how, you know, how God sets things up, how God, you know, how God's plan will be carried out eventually. So the youth home, basically what it does is they bought an old Southern Antebellum mansion in Vidalia, Georgia, and the home specializes in rehabilitating young boys between about the ages of 16 and 21. And these are young boys who the Georgia penal system feels are pretty severe offenders. A lot of them are drugs, robbery, auto theft, things like that, just kids going down the wrong track. But the Georgia penal institution feels like that these kids can be redirected. So they worked out an arrangement with the boys and with the parents to have these boys placed into the Paul Anderson Youth Home, where they live for anywhere from a year to 3 years. And the youth home rehabilitates them. Usually the youth home has anywhere from
about 12 to 20 kids living there. So it's not a large organization. It's very small, very custom to these boys' development. But they sport a 94% success rate in successfully turning these boys back out into society to become, you know, good citizens again.
Hmm. Well, and you were telling me that the way he supported this was largely through, if I'm remembering correctly, largely through the shows, the exhibitions that he was doing as a weightlifter, right?
Yes, he was tied very closely with several organizations. One of those was Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And he toured the country, usually did about 500 speaking engagements a year. And that was the sole, only way the home was able to raise its money. They take no money from the government. It's all privately funded. And from 1960 to about 1981, Paul Anderson raised 100% of the funds by doing about 500 speaking engagements a year. He wasn't wealthy enough to fly. He didn't like to spend the expense of flying, so he usually drove a very large Cadillac, you know, to accommodate his size, because when he flew, he would usually have to take up two seats in an airplane. Mm-hmm. And that was just not something the youth home could afford. So that's what he did, was 500 engagements a year, which is, you know, I mean, that was doing 2 to 3 engagements a day at times. And his wife told me,
I was just going to say, when you think about that, if that was just speaking, that mm-hmm. is grueling, let alone what he had to do, you know, weightlifting with his body to do those shows. I mean, that's tenfold right there. That's amazing.
Yes, and he really sacrificed his body physically to raise that youth home and to keep it afloat financially, because he did these weightlifting exhibitions. He'd do 2 or 3 a day. And over time, he began to get older, and he began to put aside proper warm-ups before his lifting exhibitions. And also, when he was doing these lifting exhibitions, he was usually dressed in street clothes, sometimes wearing cowboy boots, or he would even lift barefoot. And according to his wife and my conversations with her, in the later years, by the time he got into the late 1970s and began to hit the age of 40, having put aside all these proper warm-ups and feeling the pressure to keep the youth home afloat and doing more and more exhibitions, he began to really suffer from that physically. And she said that at times his knee joints would bleed after his exhibitions of lifting. Mm-hmm. But yet he just felt such a God-given passion for what he was doing that he just wasn't willing to stop or back off of it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm
amazing.
Curious about is where that passion came from. Was there evidence of that passion in his earlier life, you know, passion for kids like that and rescuing these down and outers?
Yeah, good question.
Early in his life, not really. Paul was kind of a solitary guy, but he was a happy guy, a jovial guy, had a very small circle of close friends. When he married his wife, Glenda, they were known for really being a great little couple in their church and worked with kids a little bit. And that's where some of those doors begin to open. But prior to that, not really. He felt like he was given the message, you know, by God, the direction for the youth home shortly after his Olympic victory in Melbourne, Australia. And he's never really been very specific of how he felt like that came upon him. Which is kind of a funny thing. You know, there was something, it's one of those things where, anytime you look at heroes in the Bible, who does God call? He calls the people who we as humans would really kind of look at and say they're the least qualified. God oftentimes, almost all the time, uses who we would say are the least qualified people to carry out his missions in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was the same thing with Paul Anderson. He had
How much was he, if he's on the road and speaking 500 times a year, How much time is he actually spending at the home with the kids? Or did he feel like his mission was more fundraising and establishing, promoting this home with other people doing the, I guess, the fathering or the shepherding of these kids?
That's exactly what he felt. He felt like his duty was the financial provider of the home, similar to what a father would do for a family, and that he had staff, his wife and several other people on staff, who he felt were more qualified than him to provide the proper guidance and leadership for the children, for these boys who were at the home. And however, he also says in his memoirs that in life, after he became incapacitated and basically crippled the last 13 years of his life, that God had allowed that to happen for a reason, and that reason was to bring him back to the home and to shepherd the kids more closely himself, and to be a guiding light for them, but also to be an example for them in handling challenging times in life, which was some issues that Paul was going through at the time.
Okay, so let's do this. I want you to go back and tell this fascinating story about winning a medal in the Olympics and that everything surrounding that. And then after that, I want to, as we finish up, I want to ask you what has hit you personally about this story that is what you're so hoping to convey as you tell this. But first, take us back to his winning the circumstances around winning the Olympic medal.
Okay. In 1956, after winning the 1955 and 56 World Championships, the Olympics came up in June or so of 1956. He boarded a plane, headed off to Melbourne, Australia with the U.S. Olympic team, and within about 2 days of arriving there, began to feel sick. He had arrived in Melbourne weighing about 360 to 370 pounds. He was... after having finished up the world tour, he was the overhead, the three Olympic lifts totals for him were in the 1,200 to 1,300 pound range when you combined all three lifts together. And his lift totals were estimated to be about 250 pounds higher than the next strongest man in the world at the time. So countries such as Russia, who had been ruling Olympic weightlifting up until that point, had actually pulled their heavyweight champion, Alexei Medvedev, out of the Olympics because they did not want their great champion to go be humiliated by an American. Because in 1955, Paul Anderson had actually done that as an unknown lifter. He walked on stage at Gorky Park, unknown, and outlifted their Olympic champion by 100 pounds in a single lift. And it was the most humiliating thing for Russia to go through at the time, because this was the very beginning of the Cold War. And what Anderson did caused the fans, 16,000 Russians in Gorky Park, to just go crazy, throwing hats in the air in a rainstorm, rushing the stage, trying to touch this great American who they called a wonder of nature. Fast forward to 1956, the Russians did not want that to happen to them again. So they pulled their heavyweight champion out of the competition, as did several other countries. So when Paul arrived in Melbourne to lift, about 2 days into training, he began to feel a fever coming on. And shortly, within about 24 hours, he ended up being in the hospital with a fever of about 104 to 106 degrees, which to an adult male, that could be death. That's just incredible temperature. They could not diagnose what was wrong with him, but he was in the hospital for 14 days. He was in the hospital for about 14 to 20 days. And in that amount of time, they could not keep the fever under control. Nobody could diagnose what was wrong with him. Doctors were dumbfounded. The Olympic coaches were dumbfounded, and he was losing tremendous amounts of weight, and he was completely unable to train. He lost 36 pounds in about 2 weeks, and it just decimated him. His face was burning yellow. And about 2 days before the scheduled lifting time for the heavyweights, the U.S. Olympic, the U.S. Olympic Committee and the International Olympic Committee people came in and told Paul that he was going to be pulled from the competition and that he was just too sick to lift. And Paul begged and pleaded with them to allow him to wait until the day of the competition to make that judgment. So after they left the room, Paul wandered through the hospital that night and broke into a medicine cabinet and stole a bottle of aspirin and began to self-medicate and would pop four aspirin every 3 to 4 hours. And over the next 24 to 36 hours, he was able to pull his temperature from 104 to 106. He was able to get it down to 101 degrees. And still, even 101, any of us would be in the hospital over that. Mm-hmm. And but at 101, Paul was actually starting to feel better. So the powers that be came, you know, arrived at the hospital the day of the lifting and, you know, examined him, and the doctor says his temperature's down to 101, and they agreed to let him lift. The lifting event was supposed to start at 8 p.m. that night. They put Paul in a cab around 6 o'clock. They rushed him off to the facility and got him there, hoping that he was going to be able to lift right at 8 o'clock. And what they discovered when they got there was that the lifting exhibitions, the lifting competitions were 4 hours behind schedule. So he had to wait. He failed to bring the aspirin with him. So his temperature began to rise again. It began to just ever so steadily creep up and up and up. And by about midnight, when they finally called the heavyweights to start their lifting, Paul was laying on a cot in a dark hallway behind the lifting area, just trying to preserve whatever strength he had. And he was at a paltry 306 pounds is what he was weighing by that point. And he went into the heavyweight lifting competition and was losing badly. And actually going into the final round of lifts was not even had a chance of even being on the podium. So he wasn't even going to be in the top three. And he was just not able to lift anything that was coming at him. Humberto Silvetti, who was from Argentina, he was winning the competition with the gold. They pretty much had assumed that he was getting ready to take the gold. And also what was happening was that the other lifters, seeing how sick the mighty Paul Anderson was, they began to feel energized, and those lifters were actually beginning to lift more than they had been lifting in the past competitions. So it was just kind of two-edged sword that was against Paul. In one of his lifts, he began to feel the presence of God stirring in him. And he went backstage and got down on his knees and said, you know, basically, God, you brought me up as a Christian, you know, but I've never really lived my life. My parents, you know, brought me up in the church, but I've never really, really dedicated my life to you. And I know, Lord, that I got to this point only because you allowed it, and that this gift of strength I have is something that you have given me. But, Lord, I know that you did not give me the strength for me to come here and fail. So, Lord, please just help me in this. Help me, guide me, and I will dedicate the rest of my life to doing whatever you want me to do. And he went back out on stage, failed with a couple more lifts, went backstage, prayed some more, finally laid down on a cot, told an aide to wake him when it was his next turn, and just to tell him how much he needed to lift in the overhead press to win the gold medal. So he slept again, the aide came and woke him up, and the aide said, Paul, you're going to have to lift in the overhead press 313.5 pounds. If you want to win the gold medal. And Paul's first two attempts, he had completely failed. So Paul walked on the stage. He was actually capable at prime health of over 400 pounds in the overhead press. So 313 was a mere warm-up weight for him. So he walks onto the stage. He has sweat just pouring down his head. His skin is just burning yellow from the fever. He just has no balance at all and is strictly when he bends over to grab the bar, he can just feel his head stirring and the dizziness setting in again. And it's, you know, just the fact that he's gripped this massive bar on the floor that he's even able to stand up still. And when he grips that bar, he once again prays in his mind to God and says, God, if you'll just let me get this over my head, I will set all of this self-aggrandizing status and wealth aside, and my life is yours. And he stood up, he cleared the bar to his chest, and he pressed it overhead. And he won the gold medal. And he didn't win the gold medal because he was the strongest man. He ended up winning because he was the lighter lifter, because he had actually lifted the same amount as the leader of the competition had lifted, but because Paul had lost so much weight, he was now lighter than the other lifter. So he won because he was, not because he was strongest, because he weighed less.
Hmm.
So he ended up winning the gold medal. He traveled back to the United States. He deboarded the plane in America, and his illness was completely gone and undiagnosed, and nobody ever knew what it was.
Wow. Okay. That's
amazing. And he retired from Olympic weightlifting upon landing in America, went professional, and followed God for the rest of his life.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. So, okay, so now we are at the end of our time here. So let me just ask you, and John, you may have another question after this, so feel free after this. So when you tell the story, and I know you're passionate about it and you're looking to really write a book about this, what is the one or two or three main things that you're hoping lands in people's hearts and sticks?
Two things: following God's plan and understanding that following God's plan in life requires tremendous amounts of perseverance. Paul Anderson is the most persevering individual I think that I have ever read or studied about. And it was through his raw perseverance and just blatant determination to follow God's plan and to become the strongest man in the world that he was able to live and experience the life that he lived. But what it really tells me and what really passions me about this is that he was willing to follow God's plan at whatever cost. And he set aside the self-aggrandizing status and wealth to take the talents and gifts that God gave him to use them for God's purpose and not for man's purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good, because, you know, we see so repeatedly, you know, people who have this talent that could be entertaining, if you will, and it just seems like so many will use that for their own personal gain, comfort, popularity, and that's obviously not what Paul did. I mean, he turned all of his attention, all of his skills and abilities to eventually just help youth, you know, but obviously under the passion of God. So that's an amazing story. John, do you have any final things?
I think I'm going to have to follow Charlie's lead and do a little research on this guy myself some, because I'm really curious. I love to hear the story of someone who has that kind of determination, but what I'm always looking for is, what is the motivation underneath that? There's something that drove him, and, you know, he had a passion. It wasn't just pure, you know, gut determination, I don't think. I think there's something that was really, he was passionate for, that he desired, but I'm not sure what that was, that sent him in this direction. Charlie, do you know? Have you run across anything that talked about that?
He truly felt the closest I could get to that, and understanding someone who has that kind of accomplishments under their belt, sometimes it's always hard to fully understand what really drives them, because they're just functioning on a different level.
Yeah.
But he truly felt like that God gifted him with that strength, and that there were literally no limitations to it. He truly felt that.
I think I have a vague memory of actually seeing him, and I'm pretty sure I was in college at the time, and I was looking at a picture of him on the internet while you were talking, and that brought back, I definitely remember seeing this man, and the thing that struck me when I watched him was he didn't come across as a performer. You know, he spoke about the Lord and he spoke about the home. He did his weightlifting exhibition in front of everybody, but it wasn't a performance. It wasn't, hey, everybody come look at me and see how great I am. It was more, I've got this, I want to catch your attention, but here's where, then he would start talking, and you could just hear there was a passion in him about something more than just weightlifting.
There was, and he would often state in his speaking engagements, he would say, if I, Paul Anderson, the strongest man in the world, can't get through a day without God, then why do you think you can?
That's a great point.
Yes.
That's a great point. So, Charlie, I'm going to ask you some final thoughts here in a second, and then we'll wrap it up. But one of the guys on the chat line said, has Charlie considered writing a screenplay rather than a book? And another guy said, oh, it just seems like that would make a great movie. That ever thought crossed your mind?
Somebody mentioned that to me about a month and a half ago. And I think it would be a fantastic idea because I think the story of Paul Anderson is just, like I said earlier in the conversation, it's a lost story. And I don't have any experience in writing a screenplay, and if anybody could put me in touch with someone who does, I'd be more than happy to go down that kind of a path.
Yeah. So, Charlie, thank you for doing this with us. This has been fascinating. And so let me just give you an opportunity, if you have any final thoughts that you really haven't shared yet, to do that now. Do you have any?
I would say, you know, if you want to learn a little bit more about Paul Anderson, I would certainly direct you to the Paul Anderson Youth Home, which is still running fully today. It's their website is PAYH, Paul Anderson Youth Home, .org. PAYH.org.
Okay. Great. Well, again, Charlie, thank you for this. This has been so good. And you know, you belong here in our community here in Base Camp, so let's you and I talk about that. And
we will.
And I
appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, and here we were doing a retreat in your backyard, but I know your daughter had a prom, which was unexpectedly canceled because of the snowstorm, but we'll figure out a connection here on that. So thank you so much for the evening.
Thanks, Gary.
All right, everyone, this has been great. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week. See ya. Bye.
Good night.